Well, thank you very much. Yeah, maybe Take Me to the Pilot would have been better by Elton John, but we'll settle for the Sinceros and Take Me to Your Leader. Probably the typical protocol would be to hulk, just completely ignore the fact that we're experiencing some technical difficulties, but we are. And Sky Chief Brian just said, "Don't worry, Commander Wells. I'll make it happen if we have to use tin cans and some string." So we have it going on. It's also in the minds of some tempting for us, that is on this end of the broadcast, to embellish and make something out of nothing. But the fact of the matter is any time that we have a controversial guest on the program, we get a little of this, but tonight we're getting a lot of it. So we'll carry on and just do the best we can here. And when the systems come back up, then the systems will come back up, and we'll keep working on them between now and then. Our guest tonight is Daryl Sims. He is the alien hunter, and his story is very, very compelling. We got a long way to go. So make yourself a proper cup of tea and come right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stand by. Okay, Daryl, let me ask you something. Do you find that the majority of the abductees are adults, or do these abductors target children? And if so, why do you think they do this?
They do target children, and almost everyone's events, even if they only discover them when they're older, when you work with them, you'll find invariably that most of these people were taken when they were children. The reason, and I'll make this as clear and as easy as possible, is the fact is that children are innocent, and they're impressionable, and it's easier to program children than it is adults. And abduction is still kidnapping. It always has been, always will be. You can call it anything you want, but it's still the same thing. And that's the reason they do it. It has to do with programming. And most of these people, especially contactees, will often, and many abductees too, actually believe that their parents are not their own parents. This is part of programming that these entities tell these little children when they're little, just babies, that your parents are not even your parents. We are. We are your parents. We are in charge, and so on and so on. It just mental brainwashing is all this is. It's just really some sick stuff, in my opinion.
It is some sick stuff. And, I have to go back to the, inevitably, I have to go back to the ancient text. And, do you see, and if you don't, it's okay, but I have to ask, do you see a, well, one might categorize as a religious crossover here? Do you find any correlation between the coded messages that appear in scripture with some of these things that are actually happening? It just seems like what you're suggesting is they're trying to take the humanness out of the human and just separate them from all of the fundamental elements of this reality, starting with your parents, as you just mentioned.
That I think you've hit it pretty hard there, and accurately. That number one, that they're interested in causing a division in the family. They do this, and it gets much more complex than what we were discussing here. But to answer the second part of your question, is there by the nature of what they do and the history of what they do from ancient texts, from the ancient Warkans, the Sumerians, Ugaritic text, Sanskrit, the Bible, Hebrew, Greek, it doesn't make any difference. Anywhere you read this material, you will ultimately find, even from a religious context, Christian context, Hindu, it makes no difference. When I went to Turkey, right there, I was talking to a guy on an airplane and telling about my stuff there for 8 hours, and he just loved it. And he said, "Well, we don't have any of that in Turkey." I said, "Yes, you do." He said, "No, we don't." And I said, "Tell me about the jinn of Islam." He got real scared and looked at me and said, "We don't talk about them. They might not bring you back." I said, "You got the same stuff that we have. Nothing's changed. Only the viewpoint of each culture has changed. If you're in Ireland, it's the wee little folk and the fairy folk. And if you read the real history of fairies and the wee folk that the Irish talk about, these are not friendly little people. They might not bring you back if they don't like you or you don't do what you're supposed to do. This is systemic in every culture, anywhere you go, anywhere in the world. It makes no difference what the religion is or anything else. It will be consistent in its message of taking people, doing the same type things to people. I've got 1,600 cases worldwide, and it makes no difference where I go, anywhere. It's almost like reading a textbook. I mean, and some of these people are, some of the cases I've had, I mean, these people were born in 1900s. A couple of cases that I had that were in Auschwitz, of all things, abductees. And I mean, one of the ladies, you could actually look at her, and she still had the numbers on her arm. And just as clear an abductee as anybody in the world. It made no difference. These people are engineers. They're brilliant people. I've got people who are prisoners, I mean, in prison, still getting taken. In one case, the guy's guard got taken with him. We've got deaf people. We've got people from the Nation of Islam. We've got mental cases. Now, I'm sure some people will laugh about that and say, yeah, probably most of you. But the fact is, we've got mental cases that were referred to me directly from MHMR because of their abduction phenomena. They said even though they've got a mental difficulty, there is something going on with them. In fact, the doctor that referred them was an abductee herself right at HMR here in Houston. So you're completely right in your take on that. And the next direction I think you could go from there is literally to look at it from who's next on the list to visit them. If there's a problem with abductees, if there is a difficulty and they need adjusting or they want things fixed or changed, something really radical begins to happen. What happens is they will send what we refer to as a MIB. A MIB is an individual called Men in Black, kind of like the movie Men in Black, the tongue-in-cheek movie. But there are two kinds of MIBs, really. These MIBs are literally a surreal type, which is the real alien type, which they, believe it or not, they wear a black coat, long black coat, and a large black hat, and they absolutely baffle the abductee when they see them. They scare them. They don't know how to do. They don't know what to do with them. They're not like the alien. They're connected, but what are they? And you're looking at another bottle, but it's a milder form of the enforcement division. These guys are there to fix problems, to make things work, to get results, so to speak. And we've got plenty of evidence of this sort of thing happening. You've got another kind, and I'll only touch on this briefly, a second kind of MIB, and these are government-type people. They were especially showed up in the 1950s and 60s, and intimidated a lot of UFO witnesses. And these government-type people, sponsored by the government, would question people and so on and so on. Recently, and this is all I'm going to say about it, one of my abductees was contacted by one of these MIB types, a government MIB. And I don't mean alien, I mean the government style. And later, whenever I finish with that case, I'll report back to you, John, and let you know what exactly happened. But I think there's going to be some evidence in that, some real, actual, physical evidence of the government involvement in that program.
Clearly, the government knows that these UFOs exist. There have been stories circulating for years, and now they're resurfacing. And again, they've been put on, they've been put into some unsealed alien files about a meeting between President Eisenhower twice with aliens in New Mexico. So, I mean,
has a great deal of credibility to it. And I lived in, believe it or not, you're not even going to believe where I lived. For 13 years, I lived in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And guess what? Air Force Base is right next door. Holloman Air Force Base, where the event took place that you just described.
Yeah, this is very interesting. So there are two types of the Men in Black. The ones that are, I suppose, they're human. They're just government agents, and then there are the other ones that I understand. If you don't comply, I mean, people have said that if you don't comply with their requests, they become really agitated and confused, and they really don't know what to do if you resist them. Is any of this in your experience?
It is true, and I actually can give you a couple of illustrations from my daughter-in-law fled Brazil to come to the United States to get away from the alien phenomena.
Oh,
Lord. She came and stayed with us for a while. My wife and I agreed to let her come in. Of course, she wasn't her daughter-in-law then. She was just an individual that I'd met in Brazil. And she begged us to stay for just a while with us and so on. We agreed. And anyway, she had two sets of events I want to tell you about. One of them, it's going to match exactly what you said in the beginning about was there a religious context to it? There was. And the second one deals with the MIB specifically and even more. The first one, her abductions always occur on the third month, third day at 3 a.m. Now that's rather interesting, and they occur in threes. There could be three events, 3 days in a row, at 3 a.m. And their first encounter, we woke up the next morning and she was crying uncontrollably, and she'd apparently been crying half the night and wouldn't tell us anything. And we woke up and she was crying, and I said, "What is the problem?" She's crying and she kept talking about she thought she'd gotten away from them, you know, fleeing Brazil, coming here would do it, but they followed her. And she was terrified, and she picked up a piece of stove wood from our fireplace and acted like she was going to hit this entity, and he backed off, and he left. But she was still scared and holding her firewood for a long time. And she told me, she said, well, it's okay, it's all over, you know, maybe it was a bad dream or whatever. I tried to console her with all that stupid stuff that people like to tell people that just isn't true. And she says, but my events always happen in threes. They'll be back tonight. And I said, well, I will be awake tonight, and I, the alien hunter, will be there. So we'll see what happens. So I'm hoping, well, this would be cool, you know. Something's going on in my own house. I look forward to this. Let's rock.
Right.
So anyway, I'm working on a computer about 2 in the morning and trying to stay awake. And I get thinking, wait a minute. If this is going to happen 3 times, why waste the event? Why not try something spiritual just to see if something happens? If it doesn't, so what? If it does, then I found something out that's, again, that's investigations. That's what it's all about. So I prayed about that event, and I absolutely felt 100% comfortable that the Lord would actually take care of her and it would be okay. And most people say, that's crazy, you shouldn't have done that. Well, I did, because it's been my experience before, whenever this peace that passes all understanding comes upon you after prayer, that there's something really remarkably good going to happen. Anyway, next morning, we wake up, and she's crying. So she's crying, going on, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I thought you were going to be awake. And I said, I was, but I thought, she said, but let me tell you what happened. And I said, okay, what happened? She said, it came through the wall again, and I said, okay. And she said, I picked up the firewood again. I was going to hit it. And it backed off, and she said, something so evil, I had never in my life known anything like it. I didn't know something like that existed. It came through the wall after him. And I said, really? What'd you do then? She said, I was so scared, I dropped the firewood, and I was just shaking. And she said, I did not know what to do. I wasn't paralyzed. I wasn't asleep. I'm standing up with a piece of firewood, looking at this thing. She said, I've never seen evil before in a personage. And she said, and then she started crying. I said, what? And my wife looked at me confused, and she said, the young girl said, an angel came through the wall. And she said, you can't imagine how fast those two entities got out of that room. I said, are you absolutely? She said, I'm telling you, it was an angel. And it's fascinating to me, and we've had this happen in rare events, where an angelic will show up during an abduction. If that happens, it'll ruin the abduction event, and I guarantee you, you will not have an alien problem that day. good.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with one of them. Not according to Scripture, you don't.
Yeah.
It did, well, let me ask you this. Was she able to describe what this angel looked like?
It was, she made me a drawing of it, actually. I should probably post that. But it was angelic. There was no question about it. And the third night was what was fascinating, because I realized, I said, I promise you on a stack of Bibles, I will be there. I will not go. I don't care who, tells me what or what happens. I will be there. I will be there at 3 a.m. and I will be there. And so, and she slept on a little pallet in our, on, in our living room. And anyway, 2:30 in the morning, grabbed my razor sharp Japanese sword. It's had over $1,000 worth of work done on the blade alone.
Understood.
And I'm sitting there next to her, and she sits up at 2:45 in the morning, breathing, scared and everything. And I looked at her, and I reached over and touched her on the forehead, and I said, "It's all right. I'm here." She lays back down, and I tell her to go to sleep. And I'm sitting there, waiting, hoping that Mr. Cosmic Skinhead wants to come through the wall and scare me. Go ahead and, you know, give it your best shot. Anyway, I'm sitting there, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, she sets up exactly, because I'm looking at my watch. 3 o'clock in the morning, she sets up in slow motion, in a deep trance, looks over at me and says, "They know you're here." And I said, "Yes, sweetie." I said, "Now they know I'm here, and I know that they know that I know, and I know that they know that I'm here." And it's amazing to me that they don't have enough courage to come through that wall and do some of the things to me they used to when I was a kid. Well, I'm not 4 years old anymore. I'm not 10 years old anymore. I'm older. I'm a killer bee now. I'm not a honey bee. You're not going to steal the honey and get away with it. You're going to pay the price. I said, one of these days, when these cosmic skinheads are going to find himself on the other wrong side of that wall, and I'll be waiting for him. After that, I stayed with her for a while, and she laid back down, went to sleep, and I went back to bed and told my wife what was going on, and that ended her event. However, this is the MIB event. A few months later, I've got a bunch of boxes of books and papers and tons of stuff. I'm working on my first book, and she said, "May I help you work on your book, help you assemble it in some way?" And I said, "Please do." I said, gave her some instructions. I said, "I'm going to go. My wife is waiting for me, and we're going to go eat lunch." And all of a sudden, she got real scared, and she says, "Please, if you decide to go to a movie or something like, please call me and let me know where you're going to be, because I just feel real scared." And abductees will often know when their events are going to come. They will sense it at night before the event. They'll get scared. They'll get phobic, or even during the day. Many of these events will happen in daytime as well. It isn't sleep paralysis. I'm sorry. Some of these therapists, they just, you really got it wrong. Anyway, so I go to lunch. I lock the door, leave, go to lunch, meet with my wife. We're eating lunch, a couple of fish, really good sandwiches, and they have it on paper, large paper setting where we're at. And that's kind of important for the story. All of a sudden, we're sitting there talking, having a good time, just drinking our tea and eating the fish. And all of a sudden, I said, "Oh, my God, they're in our home." She said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Dorothy, they're in our home right now." And I grabbed all the food, and insane. I grabbed all the food, just grabbed the drinks, and we ran out to the car. I got in the car, handed all the food to her, and drove as fast as I could to get home. While I was on the way home, they, a MIB, she heard a knock on the door after I'd left, and she started to lean up on the couch to get up, and she looked up. Just as she looked up, there was a guy standing there with a large black brim hat with large black coat, very tall, standing there looking at her with a, she said, it kind of looked like a book or a computer laptop, but it wasn't. She said, and he kept telling me, "Look at this, look at this, pay attention to me, look at this," and trying to focus her and to hypnotize her into whatever he was going to do. And she kept looking around, and finally she jumped one way, and then he moved, and she jumped the other way, and she looked and saw the bolt that had still been thrown in the door. He did not walk in the door. That lock was still locked on the door. She had much enough consciousness to understand that.
That is unbelievable. All right. Let's take a little break here. I'll tell you what, the time is just speeding by, and we've got a lot more to come. So everybody just hold your position. We'll be right back with Daryl Sims. All right, Daryl Sims, Alien Hunter, you've got the left seat, so just take it away.
All right. I'll tell you, these radio circumstances, I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like it. Every time I seem to get on these programs, there is a difficulty, either with somebody's equipment or mine, and it's beyond the pale when you see this over and over. But to finish up our story, and then I want to tell you a second thing about a wonderful TV program coming on. It's going to be really neat. To finish up our story about the MIB, they imitated the young lady had lived with us for quite a while, and she had met my son. They were they fell in love with each other, and were going to get married. And anyway, long story short, is they imitated his cologne and tried to make her think that he was there and trying to get her to allow them to remove an implant from her head. And of course, she didn't know she even had one. She's like, she couldn't figure this out. And the second entity showed up to enforce that. This entity was bigger than the MIB, even taller, and looked different. And she described him, and my hair stood up on the back of my neck, because that was one of the entities in my last event. And again, he doesn't show up in UFO literature. So here I am getting things confirmed about my own event by people who weren't even alive when my events occurred. This is just amazing to me. So they removed an implant from her ear, and my wife and I came rushing in. We literally unlocked the door, came in, and she was walking around incoherent with blood all caked down her neck, and it was the biggest mess you've ever seen. She was terrified, incoherent, and so on. And I told my wife, take her in the bathroom, search her, and find a scratch cut or on her, find out where that blood's coming from. And we could find no incision, no place whatsoever, but she described the biological implant that was removed from her ear, approximately 5 inches long, about as thick as a pencil lead. And it's the first time I'd ever seen one like it. And of course, the reason we think they did that was because of my implant research. And I think they thought I was going to figure out that she had one and find it. And of course, after 24 surgeries thus far on people all over the United States, and now we're doing some in Brazil, removing these alleged alien implants, you can just imagine that this is the most unusual implant I'd ever heard of at the time. And for those that want to understand implants and that sort of thing, you go to my website at alienhunter.org, and you can click on books, and there are two books there, but better, even more fun if you like, is click on the videos that are there, and you can actually see an implant in someone's hand at the Roswell Museum while I'm doing an examination on the individual at the museum itself. I'm a board member at the Roswell Museum, and I do implant and other presentations there every year.
What do these implants look like, Daryl?
They look like all kinds of things, John, just really bizarre-looking stuff. Everything from tiny, tiny spheres that are placed inside you, inside your nasal passage. That happened to me when I was 12 years old in 1960. That's how I discovered the alien implant, not because I was particularly smart or a good cop or anything else. I simply was present during the event, and I remembered it. Some of these little objects are very, very small and about the size of a pinhead, and they're gold spheres. Sometimes as many as four at a time are placed in a child's nasal passage. Some of them are, on my book, you see one as large as a lifesaver inside a woman's skull, inside her brain. And the implant itself, within 2 years, moves over to the other side of the brain. And shortly after that, it disappears altogether. It's absolutely amazing stuff to me. I'm just floored at the stuff we found in the implant work, and the evidence, physical evidence we're finding in these cases, is what makes everything real to me. I mean, I know the events are real because I was there, I saw it, and I see what's going on with these people is exactly what happened to me and other people. But more important than that is something rather remarkable. There's evidence. There is actual evidence. If you know what you're looking for, if you know how that alien thinks, if you understand his logic, and you understand how he's made and how he processes his data, you can understand a lot about his flaws and how, and actually capitalize on his mistakes and his lack of intelligence, and in some cases, their over-exuberance and their cockiness, because some of them are so smart, they don't think that anybody can do anything. And that is going to be their undoing, in my opinion. But the last thing I want to tell you is something really, really wonderful. We're doing a show for Animal Planet. It's a four-part series involving UFO alien investigations. It's called Uncovering Aliens. And it is a fun, very serious show, but a lot of fun in it. And the cast is, they couldn't have got, in my opinion, a better cast. We've got a really dynamic group of people, of four people. A friend of Coast to Coast, by the way, is an aeronautical engineer, Mike Barra. He's an outspoken critic of the malevolence of the alien agenda. And I'm telling you, sometimes Mike says stuff that I just grit my teeth. And although I believe it myself, he can hardly stand it when people are telling him things that are just off the charts incorrect about how friendly the alien is, how they're here to save the planet and fix the ozone hole or whatever. And anyway, it's a good dynamic with him. He's a really good character for the investigation. There is an aeronautical engineer, so this is great. And the next one is a UFO journalist, Maureen Ellsbury. Now, this gal is sharp as a razor. She has great interviewing skills, very fair-minded in her approach, and the audience is just going to love her. They're just going to love her. She's very sharp, very clear-headed, a typical journalist, a very good journalist, and I like their approach. I really do.
Daryl, can you talk a little bit about the DNA evidence that you may be able to bring forward?
Yes, I certainly can. The DNA evidence. Concerning DNA, we have, remember the story I told you about me waiting for that alien at our home with the Japanese sword?
Yes.
Well, one of my abductees read that. And years later, realized that he got tired of them taking him and his wife, and he didn't know what to do, so he decided to get him a Japanese sword and just wait, hoping one day that they would make a mistake, which they do. And in that case, he certainly, they forgot to tell him, you won't remember, and you're paralyzed. Well, that night that they didn't say that, he had his Japanese sword waiting next to his bed. And when they approached him, he jumped up, grabbed the sword, and impaled one of them with it. Now, whether your audience or anyone believes that story or not is irrelevant to me, because what it matters is that whatever it is he did that night with whatever was in that room, we have the DNA of it. And according to Dr. Leftwich, who studied some of the evidence, according to him, and as most of you know, Dr. Leftwich passed away just, I think, about a week ago. Yeah. And he was speaking to me and speaking to my abductee. And what he said to my abductee and the abductee relayed to me, and obviously I'd had conversations with him as well, so I knew the same thing was true. The doctor said that he was exceptionally excited, and he says, you've done it. You have provided the smoking gun. And my abductee told him, no, I had a sword. I didn't have a gun. His little tongue-in-cheek there. And Dr. Levengood said, the sample you sent me is the only tangible biological evidence that exists to link cattle mutilation samples that I personally studied of the aliens and the gray aliens, and specifically, he said, you have both kinds of DNA here, that apparently the cattle and the aliens' DNA.
Excellent.
Proteins and enzymes are some type of plant material perfectly matched the samples we've gathered for 35 years. So we're really excited about what we've got so far. And at a later time when we have time, I'll go into a great deal more discussion about what it is we're finding and what this evidence turns out to be, because we're working on it now and attempting to get some DNA work done on that. And as you know, our work is philanthropic. We don't charge our abductees a dime for anything. The surgeries we've done, the 24 surgeries thus far, everything we do is free to these people. Anything I can provide free, I do for every one of them, because I can't charge money to people who've gone through the same nightmare that I went through. And I just, I don't mind people that do that. They're going to earn their money, but I can't personally do it. It just doesn't work for me.
So DNA is common between extraterrestrials, or wherever they may come from, interdimensionals, and humans.
Well, in my opinion, yes, because in my opinion, as I said before, and I'll go into this much more detail. If you'll have me back on, I'll go into detail about who these entities are and where their DNA comes from, and I'll give you a big hint. The DNA comes from planet Earth, not from outer space. And I think I may be able to make the case.
What would this mean?
What it means is that someone has come a long, long way. Let's suppose the alien comes from outer space or time or wherever he comes from, whatever a person's belief is. The point is that I think everyone can agree on is someone came from a long, long, long way to get whatever it is you have. In other words, if we may not be the pond scum that some of these people and scientists and others seem to think that we are, that we're just barely crawled out of the mud, so to speak, and barely evolved enough to do anything, I don't think that's even remotely close. I think the fact that we are so unique that someone out there, wherever that is or whatever it is, has come a long way to get whatever it is we have, and they don't have it. Now, if they're superior to us in every way and the millions of light years ahead of us and so on, why is it that they need what it is we have? Isn't that fascinating? And they've been here for about 6,000 years, and their program, in my opinion, based on what they have revealed to some of our abductees, is about over. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. You know, this kind of ties in with the old Sumerian writings, doesn't it?
It does, for fact. The fact is that I don't care if you believe they came here to save the planet and you're one of these contactees. It makes no difference to me. In the Sumerian version of this thing, they came here and took mankind and made slaves of them to mine gold for them. If that story is true, they weren't very nice back then either. Every population, every ancient culture, the Aztecs, Toltecs, Olmecs, ancient Egyptians, every one of these cultures that had contact with these entities, and I'll go into that a lot more when I come back, every one of those ancient cultures are now extinct. And now we're the smart guys on the block. Makes me wonder what we're up for.
Now, this is a little off topic, but I have to ask, is anybody ever ex-CIA?
Oh, I hear this a lot from people. They'll tell me, you know, you can't be ex-CIA because because they kill you as soon as you're finished with your job. I said, really?
Right.
I said, well, why are all these people retired and living?
Right.
And I said, well, you got to be spying. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, I get accused of that by some of these clowns. I said, I wish somebody would send me a check and pay me for being the spy I never was. Because I just don't get paid. And I've had a couple of my competitors out there in the UFO field say, well, you got to be a spy for the CIA. And I said, well, I'm not doing a very good job of it. Because I'm telling everybody that are state secrets. Why would I be doing that? Because I don't believe that the CIA or anybody else has the right, or the NSA or anyone has the right to hide this information from us. I understand perfectly that we're in a lot of trouble, and I know that they know that. I understand that. But the fact is, this information belongs to all of us, and I don't mean the USA. I mean humanity. We all have the right to know and understand what we're up against. I don't care how many people have been fooled by it or love it. and think that they're here to save our planet or whatever. They haven't saved anybody or done anything from anyone. In fact, when you look at my medical presentation, which I show only to doctors and medical people or investigators in that field, and you look at the human and animal mutilations that I have, and you will not find these on the internet that I'm talking about. When you see this kind of stuff, it makes you relook at that and revisit that whole entire phenomena and think, my God, what in the world is going on? These are not aliens out there to save the planet or to help us do anything. They're here for some other agenda. And on top of all of that, these little guys are not in charge of anything. They're doing what they're being told by someone else.
Do you think we're about to meet them on a grander scale? And actually, this was a two-part question. The first part is, are these abductions increasing in frequency? And do you think we're about to meet them? I personally do.
I think that there's something big on the horizon. I can tell you that from my own personal information. I have over 1,600 cases worldwide. I'm privy to some information that some of these alien entities don't realize abductees can overhear. They think that they're switching them off and they can't hear or understand anything. But the fact is, one of the reasons they give you a screen memory or cover your memory or try to in your events is because you saw or heard things you were not supposed to hear or see. And some of those things I've uncovered and found and done some really, really good work with that. And in my opinion, it's coming to a head. Whatever it is, it's coming to a head. There's no question about that. We're in for it, whatever that is.
All right. And let me ask you one more thing. Is there any advice you can give to anyone who may be abducted in the future as to how they can hold on to their memory of the event and how to protect themselves psychologically from the effects of an abduction?
If you're an abductee or you're a person that comes into contact or your children do this sort of thing and you want to help your children, my best advice to you, and because it's going to mean a lot more to the people who are involved in this, if you will simply email me, go to my website at alienhunter.org and click on Alien Hunter there, go through the site and look at everything, but email me personally and say, send me the information on how to defend myself. I'll send you about a dozen things that you can do to defend yourself, all kinds of things. Things that will fit your belief system. Some, if you're a Christian, it'll fit your belief system. If you're not a Christian, it'll fit your belief system. If you're Hindu, it'll fit your belief system. I've got things for everybody. It's great stuff, and some of the stuff is wonderful.
Well, all right. So we've got a couple of minutes here. What's the next step for you? Is this to follow up on the DNA sample?
Oh, it is. We have our whole interest in this business is physical evidence. I mean, not that I have to have physical evidence to prove to me anything, because I already know it's true, and I already know enough about what's going on for 38 years of investigating. I get it. But the fact is that we need evidence to tell us a great deal of information, more very specific things that we need to know, and obviously to bring the scientific and medical community into the field as well, so that they will look at this with a very different eye.
Daryl, thank you very much for being with us on the program tonight. We will bring you back soon. I have your contact numbers, and I'll give you a call during the week, and we'll get you back on the program as soon as we possibly can, okay?
I look forward to hearing from you personally.
Thank you very much. That's Daryl Sims. He is the Alien Hunter, and his book, Alien Hunter, The Evidence in Light, his website is alienhunter.org. Sorry about the poor transmission quality tonight, but you know, as we say out here in space, stuff happens. Take care. I'll talk to you later. This is Coast to Coast AM.